guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This offseason is going to be about my family, and they deserve it. There's more to think about than just me, and I think that's what you commit to when you have a family, and they commit a lot to me. You know, that obviously goes both ways. It's a big commitment. Sitting here, laying here 3 days after the year, getting my Achilles worked on my thumb, and you go, what are we doing this for? You know, what are we doing this for? Who are we doing this for? Why are we doing this? You got to have answers to those questions, and they have to be with a lot of conviction. You know, when you lose your conviction, then you probably should be doing something else.
That's still the crap I care about. I know he goes to this thing every year, but he's still not in camp in Foxborough. That's the thing I care about. Off-season of the family. So that, to me, is still the story. Not the gold embroidery or whatever. And his hand on her tush. So we got that. We got Red Sox-Yankees tonight. We got the Celtics last night. And basically a game being fixed, which is really no big deal. Standard operating procedure in the NBA. It's still striking.
It's on page 6 of the NBA manual.
It's still fun to talk about, which we are talking about it. And Bruins off-season. All of it on the board with your calls here as promised. Let's lead off with Chris in the truck on Brady. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, what's going on? That jacket is straight out of a Siegfried and Roy act in Vegas.
Good
no
one.
Doubt about it. Also, TJ McConnell gave Rozier problems in game 3. If you look at every time the ball was inbounded, Rozier had trouble getting it over half court and making passes. It's like Rozier didn't want to hustle down court, and the little bug just kept peppering him. So I see more isolation coming around picks on that guy, you know, putting him around screens, and there you go. You just can't get open shots with Rozier.
It was obvious in game 1 or game 2.
Game 2.
Where they're up whatever points in the fourth quarter, and they bring Simmons back in the last 5 minutes and kick away the lead, and it took until their backs against the wall in game 4 for Dingleberry there, Brett Brown, to realize they're a better team with McConnell on the floor.
Yeah, but what did he play last night? 38 minutes? 39 minutes? Something like that? So the guy goes from getting yanked and coming off the bench early to now 39 minutes. And it's like all you want to do is take a fist and, you know, knock the coach upside the head and say, hello, where were you in game 2? Now it's 3-0. Too late. You woke up too late. You already blew it. And so I'm not worried as much about McConnell on the defensive end because I honestly think that's where they might be able to exploit him. I mean, he's small. So back his ass down near the basket. But on the offensive end, I don't think he committed a turnover last night. Meanwhile, Simmons has been turning the ball over like crazy this whole series. To me, that he made a difference on the offensive end.
Anthony Medford has a Red Sox thought. Hi, Anthony.
How you doing, Mike? Yeah, on these series tonight, this is a big series. If they're lucky to be close to the Yankees at the end of the year, they have to start winning these head-to-head series against the Yankees, at least take out of 2 out of 3. And Corey's going to make his first big decision. I hope Mazza would agree with this. They've got no production from the catcher, Mike, at all. Vasquez ain't hitting his weight. He's hitting .180. And Leon had his first home run the other night. You have to get some offensive production from the catcher. You got to try Swihart back there.
Should they be catching Swihart?
I mean, I would do it. They won't. They don't trust him. They don't. They don't trust. He would have played by now if they trusted him.
Do you believe this? Let me just read Pete Abraham. He says, the Sox believe Christian Vasquez and Sandy Leon are their best options to catch and justify. And justifiably so, given the team's 3.45 ERA. That Vasquez and Leon are the worst offensive duo in the majors is largely incidental, meaning irrelevant. The league average for a major league catcher is .228 with a .679 OPS, which means these guys are even worse than that.
Their OPS is in the fours.
As teams get more sophisticated with using analytics, a catcher's primary job is to carry out the game plan with the pitchers. Offense is a bonus. Like one giant excuse for the fact that your catchers can't hit the way out of a paper bag. Like, no, actually, the advanced metrics show it's okay if they can't hit because managing the pitching staff is more important, and the catchers are the reason why the pitchers have the 3.45 ERA, not the pitchers themselves. It's the way Vasquez puts down a 2. Is the reason they have a 3.45 ERA. And advanced analytics show, like, that just feels like...
I mean, this reads like the same nerd article comparing Jackie Bradley Jr. to Jose Abreu last summer.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just...
Who really needs the offense when they have that kind of a defense? And the WRTC plus, I mean, that's really the important thing.
See, but it's also going too far. There is a tipping point. there is a tipping point where you say, I can't get that. I can't get that. I can't get, you know, whatever they're hitting combined, 150 or whatever it is, and, you know, no on base and no slug. I can't get that. Now, look, they haven't had any problem scoring runs. Okay, the Yankees are first in the league in run scoring. The Red Sox are second, and they're only 5 runs apart. So it hasn't really hurt them yet. But I don't think you can win a championship with 3 spots at the bottom of your order that suck. And right now they have 3 that suck.
Angelo and Everett with the Bruins thought. Go.
First of all, I you know, the Bruins got to do something with Chara, and they got to get rid of him and Tukarask. Tukarask is a dunbell and net. He's in his butterfly too early. He couldn't stop a nosebleed. You've got to build around Marchand and Bergeron. You've got to unload those two first and then figure out the rest. Because seriously, they could have won that series if they stepped up, and they didn't.
Okay, but you're talking about the wrong guys. Char didn't allow a 5-on-5 goal to the Stamkos line. Well, I'm sorry, 1 in the 5 games, and Rask was good in the 5 games.
And the one that Chara allowed was the one where McAvoy got knocked down.
Thank you. Right, it shouldn't even have been. Look, I'm trading Rask because he's not worth $7 million. It has nothing to do with the Tampa series. He was good in the Tampa series. But I thought Maz put it well yesterday and sort of crystallized my feeling about Rask the whole time, and that is, how much value over the average are you getting for his $7 million? In other words, Maz asked, if Anton Khudobin was your starting goalie this postseason, how different would your results have been?
I think they'd have been basically the same.
I think they would have been exactly the same.
I mean, Rask stole one game for you. I say stole. There was one game in Toronto where you say he made a difference. That was a 3-1 game, game 4.
That's right.
But
he kicked away a couple others in between.
Right, and he was bad overall in the Toronto series. So you could have gotten that from Khudobin. And at the end of the day, Rask was good in the Tampa series, but it didn't get you anything.
So could Anton Khudobin have lost in 5 games to Tampa? You bet. Could Anton Khudobin have done just enough to beat Toronto? You bet, just like Rask did. Not much of a difference. Anton Khudobin cost you $1 million. Tuukka Rask is $7 million, and he has signed for 3 years. So between Backes, Krejci, and Rask, that is, quick math, $14, $20
million. Yeah, more.
Just over $20 million for those 3 guys, and they're under contract for the next 3 years. They got to move some of that money.
I mean, it's almost a 30-year payroll.
They got to move some of that money. They got to figure out, or else they're not going to be able to sign all those young guys who come up for bigger contracts than they should. The league has a problem. But be that as it may, that's what it is. You're going to have to sign these young kids, and you're not going to have the room if you have these 3 guys on your roster. And I think you might be saddled with Backes because I don't think you get squat for him. I think there would be a taker for Krejci. I think there might be a taker for Rask. You're going to lose the deals, but in dealing the money, is that just good enough? Is it good enough just to deal the money? And I'm almost at that place.
Oh, I would say it is for sure. I mean, certainly on Backes and maybe even Krejci. With Rask, you got to get something back.
Chara, would you stop with that? He was one of your better players this year. He's part of the solution, not part of the problem, as much as you want to rag on him. He should be a second pair guy next year. Hopefully he is. 1 year, $5 million. It's a good contract. I'll say this. If the Bruins are out of it, I'd trade him at the deadline and get first-round picks for him. I would do that in a heartbeat. But no, he's hopefully you're contending next year, and he's one of the reasons why. Alan in Florida on the Red Sox. Hi, Alan.
Hello, guys. Maz, I finally agree with you. I'm without a question a Bridget guy. No question about
good
it.
Good job, anyway. Alan. Attaboy.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing, I even agree with you on the NBA, only that it should be in page 1, not page 6.
Go ahead.
You know, I know it's only May. Could you explain, I mean, maybe this doesn't make sense. It does to me. They're playing a horrendous Texas team Sunday. Yankees got their 1, 2, and 3 guys set in the rotation. And we're going to go with Pomerantz, who hasn't been able to get a batter out. Then you're going to go with David Price. So Michael Kay was like chomping at the bit the other day. I was watching the Yankee game saying, "Whoa, we face David Price on Wednesday. Oh, boy." and then Porcello on Thursday. Why wouldn't you have pitched somebody else to try to steal the game Sunday against that horrendous Texas team?
Have Sale,
who always ties at the end of the year, and be ready and go today and give him an extra day's rest?
It's a great question.
It's a nice point, Alan.
It is. He's right. I was a little surprised that Sale went Sunday, too. And, you know, we didn't really talk about this, and we probably should have. He was on his regular day. I mean, so I wonder if Sale went to them and said, "I don't want to pitch with 6 days of rest." 5 is one thing. but we have an off day on Monday. Now I'm looking at six. I'll have gone a whole week basically without pitching. I wonder if he went to them and said, I got a pitch on Sunday. And they accommodated him.
The Sports Hub.
This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Terry Rozier on the left side. Blitz by Ilyasova. Pressure down here half court. Keeps Redick at bay. And they're calling another foul against the Celtics. Embiid slaps the ball away from Rozier. And now they're going at it. Joel Embiid grabbed the ball from Rozier. He grabbed it back. And Joel Embiid kept going at Rozier.
Joel Embiid laughing. But it was Terry Rozier who knocked his hand away. I'm not sure if Terry Rozier did not throw some kind of forearm or some kind of punch there.
Terry Rozier and Joel Embiid. Double technical. Kind of what we expected. Right? Turns the corner. Finds Embiid. Gets to the basket. Two-hand slam. They finally pick the Celtics defense apart. That'll do it for the first half, in which the Celtics shoot 37%, commit 9 turnovers, 3-point play for Ilyasova, and a fifth foul on Jaylen Brown. 69-62, and a technical foul.
Jaylen Brown.
It's on Jaylen Brown. He didn't think the NBA was going to have 3 nights without games. Well, another technical. Brad Stevens. O'Connell out near half court, spins away from Rozier. Attacks the paint, puts it off the window and in. I mean, it has been a rout. O'Connell against Rozier.
Yeah.
A rout. Final score, Philadelphia 103, Boston 92. Sixers get the win, but the Celtics get the split, and they can close it out Wednesday night.
They beat us. I think that we just got to get back to the, we'll watch the film, we'll try to improve where we can improve, and we just have to play better.
They got called for offensive foul, and I was trying to get the ball to keep the game flowing because I felt like we had an advantage. I was trying to get the ball, and he kind of kept the ball away from me and tried to punch me twice, but too bad he's so sure that he couldn't get to my face. I didn't understand why it was a double technical because I was just trying to get the ball and he was the one trying to swing.
Two teams, two guys. That's what it's about, man. Both fighting for their team.
I heard some about the officiating in there, which is obviously part of the story, a big part of the story. And I approach this from a different place than, like, a Celtics fan complaining about the refs, like, it cost us the game. Like, I'm sort of sitting here just in wonderment at how blatant the NBA is and just how part of the game it is. So, again, the NBA lost a lot of inventory last year in the playoffs. They had a really bad playoffs. As Maz said, the Golden State Warriors were 16-1.
16-1. The only game they lost was in the finals.
And the Cavs went something like 12-1 on the way to the finals.
Correct. Combined, they were 24-1 going into the finals.
Okay, so all those uncompetitive series led to 79 playoff games, which was a record low, which forced the league to kick back money to the networks, TNT and ESPN, which forced teams to make less money than they thought they were going to make, and, most importantly to everyone concerned, had the salary caps be lower than everyone thought. This is why we remember this. When the Celtics were in the offseason last year, they weren't expecting the caps to come in where they came in and thus had to trade Avery Bradley. And so, cut to this year, you get to the second round. Last night, Celts going for a sweep. Last night, Cavs going for a sweep. Tonight, you've got two series out west that are about to end in 5 games. And the NBA is circling back to the same spot they were last year. Lost inventory, lost revenue, maybe lower caps, etc. And so what happens last night in Philadelphia? Tony Brothers and Scott Foster. Tony Brothers, who now has reffed 8 consecutive Celtics playoff losses.
It's unbelievable.
And Scott Foster, who I don't know how in the world he's still reffing in this league. And the fact that he is still reffing in this league is a freaking joke. It's a disgrace. Because he was Tim Donaghy's guy, and when you look at it, there is no other conclusion to draw other than that he was betting on games too. But the league just let him off and got the FBI to let him off too because David Stern wanted to blame it on a rogue ref. And if he had more than one ref, then he has a conspiracy. Then he has a real problem on his hands. It was much easier just to blame one guy who was going off the rails and no one else was involved than say other refs were involved, because it looks like Scott Foster sure as hell was involved. And I'll go back and give you the phone records here that sort of, you know, lets everybody know exactly what was going on. But somehow Scott Foster survived. So anyway, you get to last night. Here comes the Celtics killer, Tony Brothers, and the shadiest of shady refs in Scott Foster. And the next thing you know, the Celtics go from, as Gary Washburn pointed out, something like the, I'll give it to you exactly. The Celtics go from the 11-minute mark of the second period to the 28-second mark of the third period, a stretch of 22 and a half minutes without a single free throw. In the same span, the Sixers attempted 16. In the second quarter, I believe the Celtics had 12 fouls. The Sixers had one. You said it was Smart, Brown, and someone else all had three fouls before half.
Yeah, Tatum.
And there you go. And so I ask, was the game fixed? And the answer? Yeah, kind of. Managed. Engineered.
Yeah, genetically modified.
And I'm not even outraged. I just marvel at how blatant the NBA is about it. Tony Brothers and Scott fought. They need a series extended, and here comes Tony Brothers and Scott Foster.
So just quickly, did you see the sheet that Jimmy gave you?
Nope.
Okay, so let me just explain this to you. Okay, there are currently four series going on in the NBA. Okay, Houston and Utah, it's 3-1 Houston. Utah's only win, Scott Foster was the... Let me finish. Scott Foster was the lead ref on May 2nd. Okay. The other Western Conference series, Golden State, New Orleans. 3-1 Golden State. New Orleans' only win? Scott Foster was the lead referee on May 4th. Boston, Philadelphia, 3-0. It was 3-1 now, sorry. I'm, 3-1. Philadelphia's only win? Last night, Scott Foster was the lead referee.
Oh, the last line's the best.
On May 7th. These are the only three games that Scott Foster has refereed this month. Now, I would
he truly is the fixer.
I mean, it's unbelievable,
it's
really.
It's so blatant.
It's unbelievable. And you would say, he clearly couldn't be in two places at once. Otherwise, he'd have been in the Toronto-Cleveland series. Like, yeah, you can't leave that one out. That's 4-0. So you look, it's unbelievable when it's laid out for you like this. All three series are 3-1. All three remaining series are 3-1. And in the case of the one victory in all three series, Scott Foster was the lead ref.
So, even just the appearance of Scott Foster, the appearance of him still being in the league is mind-blowing that he's still in the league. Tim Donaghy admitted to betting and affecting NBA games while he was an NBA ref. We all know Tim Donaghy. He had a phone buddy. He had a buddy that he contacted repeatedly during the time he was betting on games and fixing games. And that was Scott Foster. Foster received 134 phone calls from Donaghy between October of 06 and April of 07, which was the exact same time period during which Donaghy admitted to betting on NBA games. The report said that Donaghy called Foster more than any other ref and that he didn't call any other official more than 13 times. So he called Foster 134 and no other ref more than 13. This is the best part. Donaghy's calls to Foster took place immediately before and after games Donaghy was officiating 54 times. And they also came in and around calls to not his bookie, but his middleman, where he bet games through a middleman, a gentleman by the name of Martino. So the calls would go like this. 10:34 a.m., Donaghy calls Foster. 10:36, Donaghy calls Martino, the middleman between him and his bookie, Thomas Martino. 10:39, Donaghy calls Foster. So again, 10:34, Donaghy calls Foster. 10:36, Donaghy calls his bookie. 10:39, Donaghy calls Foster. All calls lasting 2 minutes or less. Calls the ref, calls the bookie, calls the ref back. All within 6 minutes of each other. Bang, bang, bang. Another instance here, 5:15, Donaghy calls Martino, 5:23, Donaghy calls Martino, 7 p.m., Donaghy referees game between the Miami Heat and the Orlando Magic, 8 p.m., Foster referees game between Toronto and Memphis the same night, 11:27, Foster and Donaghy speak for at least the fourth time that day, then 11:38, Foster and Donaghy speak for at least the fifth time that day. That all happened on one day, I'm sorry. So that was all one day. So again, that morning, bang, Donaghy calls Foster. Bang, he calls his bookie. Donaghy calls the bookie back. He calls the ref back. They both ref games. They talk a couple times right after the game. Bang, bang.
They talk three times in 6 minutes in the morning. Three times in 6 minutes.
The records also show Donaghy making several calls to Foster on the day of games, generally for no more than 2 minutes. This is a good part, too. The report also said that when Donaghy called Foster, he mostly used the phone that he dedicated to gambling-related phone calls. He used the burner phone with Foster. And the calls abruptly stopped when Donaghy said he had stopped gambling. So it's all right there. Like, it's all right there. Like, what do you think they were doing? It's obvious what they were doing. But David Stern has to make it look like a rogue ref and not a gambling conspiracy and not multiple refs, because then he's got a much bigger problem on his hands. It's easy just to blame one guy who was acting on his own versus referees being in cahoots fixing games. And somehow he got the FBI to go along with it. And again, however you lean politically is probably how you feel about the FBI. But either way, that's Tim Donaghy and Scott Foster. And Scott Foster is still reffing NBA playoff games. That's a brilliant, those are brilliant stats right there.
Oh, it is. It's great. Again.
All the series that are 3-1, the only wins came with Scott Foster on the floor.
Correct.
So Scott Foster has been around so long and, you know, was given a lifeline by David Stern. He doesn't need to be told what to do. Like, it's not like Adam Silver calls up Scott Foster and says, Scott, we need a fifth game. He doesn't need...
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure there is a phone in that office. I mean, it's hysterical. That last sentence, the Jimmy thing,
but
you printed out.
Murray. Foster doesn't need to be told.
Oh, he just knows.
He knows. Yeah. He knows who needs to win to extend the series.
He's like, hey, no, it's like a hitman.
So you said this
he
is like...
He just gets a little text message with a name on it, and he knows what to do.
And the Celtics knew it the second they showed up last night. They knew it the second they showed up. Maz said before, this is like the doorbell ringing at the Celtics office, and they open up, and two guys are in trench coats.
No, right then and there you go, uh-oh. Like, here we go. They're taking me out in the canoe in the middle of the lake, and that's the end of that.
Sail Hail Marys. It's like, it's comical, the NBA. And like, I don't even, to me, it's not even outrageous. It's not even like, I'm not even outraged. Like, yep, they did it. It's just standard operating procedure.
No, totally accept it. Like I told you, my father's 82 years old. I said to him today, yeah, the Celtics lost last night. He said, that game was fixed.
Who's reffing the game tonight? Moose and Rocco.
Damn it. So there you go. There's our thought on the Celtics last night. The Sixers were better. And, you know, again, how the Sixers may not have an answer for Terry Rozier. Well, they found one with a little 5'9" twerp at the end of the bench named Skippy Magoo. So this guy was able to stop Terry Rozier. So apparently it is doable. But, you know.
Scott Foster, agent of the league.
But either way, was that game fixed last night? I think we all know the answer. Here's Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What do you expect the environment to be like when you guys get back home?
We pay bulls. It's a dogfight. And we're going straight for the neck.
Marcus Smart. But meanwhile, the Celtics will come home and try and close it out tomorrow. Depending on the officials, should it be an issue? But you never know with that league. They need the inventory. These two Western Conference series should be done tonight.
Game 7, Boston, Philadelphia. Put it on the board for Mother's Day.
League's going to extend this to 7, Jimmy?
You better believe it.
Okay.
Can Scott Foster do 2 games in the same series?
Back to back. I've always operated under the premise that they will extend. They won't change the outcome. And like, if you give Philly Game 5... You are risking changing the outcome.
You are.
That's a big one. I mean, that's a big one. The Celtics better take care of business tomorrow.
Dakota and Braintree. Go ahead, Dakota.
So Dakota Dimas strikes again. And if you play my call from a week and a half ago, this was the topic that I brought up about the home field, about the conspiracies, about the cap going down. And it's all coming to light. And is it a conspiracy if everybody knows going into the game they're going to conspire? And I like to use the word influence. That's my word. They influence the outcome of the game.
Manage, yeah.
Yeah, so you had a question earlier about how many times did the 3-0 get to Game 7? I believe it's 3 times that out of the 129 that they got to Game 7. So the other thing, the video replay. We all saw that goaltending last night, right?
Yes.
The one that Simmons threw up and beat.
The offensive goaltending, yep.
how come they can change a 3 to a 2, a 2 to a 3, right, after the game is going on and then come back? And they can't do this with obvious goaltending and say, yep, that was goaltending, we're taking the 2 off the board. Or the other team, defensive goaltending, we're going to add it. LeBron James in that Indiana game 5, the referees came back and said, yep, we messed up. With 5 seconds to go in the game,
right,
LeBron blocked Oladipo's shot, clearly hit the backboard. It cost Indiana the game. Instead, Cleveland goes up 3-2. Talk about changing the series, right? That's in a playoff game with 5 seconds to go. And by the way, they're supposed to review this goaltending under 2 minutes. It's part of the review process. But guess what, guys? It can only be reviewed if the refs make the call on the court. Why is that?
That one happening last night, Dakota. No shot. You weren't getting that last night. No way. That was Rocco and Moose there on the floor.
So they should. They should just ref the game in trench coats. Seriously, and, you know, hats pulled over their eyes.
That offensive goaltending was blatant.
Oh, it wasn't even close.
We've got Andrew in Dorchester. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, buddy. What's going on?
What do you got?
So I know that, you know, the Celtics, you know, it's hard for us, you know, game four, and they're going to win. But coming back, I really think we have a strong chance. Now, let me tell you this. We're going to advance, and we're going to play Cleveland. Do you think we have a shot?
Okay. I could understand every third word there, but you said, Cleveland, do you have a shot?
No.
Not really, no.
Yes, I mean, you do.
Well, no, they can win a couple of games, maybe, but they're going to lose a series.
You have a shot.
Yeah, it'll be a more competitive series, but they're not going to win it.
You have a shot. You have a shot in this series. Definitely.
Nope.
No.
Yep.
No, not
shot to win it?
Yep.
No.
No, not with the way LeBron's playing right now.
No. Notice I said shot. I'm not. I don't know if I would.
You're
pick
beating him. Cleveland. You'll be in the NBA Finals.
You guys are delusional.
If you get past Philadelphia here on Mother's Day with the crooked referees,
let me tell you this. Like the odds. Like I always look at the odds. Like I would have bet the Celtics in the Sixers series at -370 or whatever the Sixers were. I set a date. You know, if I'm being honest, Sixers Celtics. If it was a toss up to start the series, I probably would have gone Sixers like most people. But the odds were too far. It was just really good value on the Celtics, so I would have hit that bet. I'll do the same thing with the Cavs. If the Cavs are prohibitive favorites on the money line, like 4-1 on the money line, pound the Celtics. There's good value there. They have a shot in the thing.
They're going to lose.
It's going to be chugga-chugga-chugga-chugga-dunk all over again. And Kevin Love's actually found his game. He's had a decent series, or had a decent series against those choking dog pukes that didn't even show up last night in Toronto. Disband that team and get them the hell out of the
league. The Celtics have Marcus Morris, who is the best per 100 possession ball defender on LeBron James.
Hey, let's see your nerd stat and get out of here. There's an advanced metric for you, Murray.
Suck on that.
Yeah, let's see how that one goes. When LeBron is stepping on his head on the way to dunking the ball.
Now you're talking about fixing games and referees. You know Mike and Muburn wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'm surprised you gentlemen aren't wearing your tinfoil hats like me right now based on the conversation today. You've all come swung around to my side.
Right up your alley, Michael.
That's right. And speaking of up your alley, Mike, I'm surprised you're not in Honolulu right now, shilling those lava tarps, because, God, did you see that Mustang go up in flames?
They could use one, a good straw, a good sort of funnel system to get that thing up into the atmosphere.
Yeah, a good funnel system. That's right. They need the earth fridge out there so people's cars aren't turned into tiki torches by the lava coming out of the freaking volcano.
Good tarp, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. NBA, it's a given. Mike, did you see who the referee assigned to Game 5 of the Bruins series was?
I didn't even pay attention to it.
Rooney?
Who was it?
Okay. Oh, yeah, it was your buddy and mine, Chris Rooney.
Yeah.
The guy who refuses to give the Bruins the benefit of a doubt for fear of them thinking that he's like Don Koharski and, you know, Schoenfeld's going to shove him down and throw donuts at him.
All right, so Mike, how do you explain the league letting the Capitals win last night?
Mike, what's a better story? What do you think?
Hold on. You've been saying for years that the NHL bends over backwards for Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, and they did. They got rid of Tom Wilson there. They got rid of him. They're like, here you go. The Caps have three of their top six forwards out of the lineup. They couldn't beat them last night. They couldn't. You can't beat the Caps with three of their top six forwards out of the lineup. What's the league going to do? I mean, there's only so much. Is Carey Fraser going to throw pucks actually into the net for them? They can't.
So look, you're right. I mean, I agree. If the NHL could fix games like the NBA does, they do it. They just can't. It's hard to do.
And here's the other problem, Mike. No one gambles on hockey. I mean, if people gambled on hockey, BC would never win a national championship.
I do love the gambling thing. It's just 3-0, all these series about to end early, and here comes Foster and Brothers. It's just like, it's just unbelievable. It's like Clemenza, and, you know, it's unbelievable. Like, they just show up, and here you go. You know what's coming.
No, it is. It's like...
D'Angelo and Clemenza.
They're fixers. It's like Ray Donovan Murray. They should have their own firm, Fosters and Brothers. Can we help you?
Yeah, we have great.
Dan, the angry call screener, who's in this world, he gave us this great nugget. Scott, excuse me, Tim Donaghy has a gambling site. What's it called again?
It's called, hold on, I had it up a second ago, refpicks.com.
Like, that's a term that shouldn't even exist.
Basically advertising the fact that we have refs on the take, and we've got, these are the inside picks based on what our refs are going to do out there today.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a former ref. I was corrupt. Now I'm out here doing a gambling site, and I still got guys in the league.
So, I'm sorry, refpicks.com?
Refpicks.com.
Okay, and Dan Lifshatz said that over 70% of Donaghy's NBA picks involve Scott Foster games. Again, his buddy, his pen pal, his cell phone buddy there from his gambling days.
It's unbelievable. It is. It's unbelievable. I find it comical that this site even exists. Like, if you're the league and you look at this and you say, where do you go for your information? Refpicks.com. Yeah, I mean, that's where all the inside dirt is. That's where the corruption is. I just go there. You know, Tim Donaghy's site. Refpicks.com. How is this not a Saturday Night Live skit? This thing is unbelievable.
Couldn't write it. But let's just see. Let's see who's out there game five tomorrow in Boston. Let's just watch. Let's watch the ref assignments tomorrow night.
Our goal is not to sell you picks. Our goal is to sell you winning picks. Because we got dope on the inside.
The long commercial free segment is next.
This is Felger and Mazz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Tyler Wade, the hitter, 0-for-1 with a strikeout. He shows bunt, pushes it to third. Devers will sling to second and get the out there. I don't think Brock Holt was very happy with that effort at all. And now both benches are emptying. And it looked like he took a swipe with that leg when he went by Brock Holt. And here come the bullpens as well. And this certainly looks a little more like old-fashioned Red Sox-Yankees here at Fenway Park.
Goes right in, spikes him. Here comes Austin in. Now he's out. Right there, he's out. But look at that left foot come across and clip Brock Holt when he's off the bag.
Aaron, did you watch the slide again and you didn't think he went in too hard or went in at Holt?
No. You know, because he came off the base, you know, there could have been an issue from a replay standpoint based on the rules. But no, you know, sometimes in your slide, it carries you. And I don't know if there's any carryover from all the Machado stuff last year and they're going to handle things a certain way. But, I mean, that was pretty innocuous if you ask me.
Okay, that's the last time the Red Sox-Yankees squared off. Not the very last, but the last time they faced each other in a series. It was the middle game of a series, right? And then they played one more the next night and
correct,
nothing else, right?
But correct.
Now they're back at it. And for first place in the division, a lot of good stuff to watch here with the Yankees. They've lost, won 15 of 16.
Yeah, 15 out of 16. Since they left Boston, they're 18-3.
Holy crap. So they rebounded well. And you got off to this fabulous start. What were you? Were you 17-2 at one
17
point?
17-2. So this has completely offset that, basically.
You're 17-2 to start the year, and you're only a game up in the division.
Right.
So
think of it this way. Like, again, the Red Sox are on a 119-win pace.
Holy moly.
And they're only a game ahead of the Yankees.
So you have that backdrop. Like, it's not important enough. I think it is. You know, you don't want to be the wild card and play that one game playing. But now you have the backdrop of the shenanigans with Tyler Austin and Joe Kelly and all of this. Again, you think there might be some retaliation. I'm confused. Who owes who? Like, who?
Well, I think if there's anyone left to be pissed off, it's the Yankees. Because the last thing that happened was Kelly hitting Austin with a pitch.
Okay, but didn't Austin spike Brock Holt?
But again, in the mind of Boone, that was innocuous.
Or is he just saying that?
Well,
he
maybe.
Spiked him.
Maybe.
It was obviously a bad slide.
So look, apparently Boone said before the game tonight that, you know, the incident is behind us. Now, I don't know. Maybe they're playing possum and maybe they can come out and do something. Or maybe they're just going to do it later in the year. Or maybe it is behind them. I mean, like, I don't have the answer for you. I'm just telling you that the Yankees did not sound like a team that was ready to close the book on it when they were here. So whatever they're saying now, like, they're not going to come out and say that they're going to hit him or do something. But given what's at stake between these two teams this year, I have a hard time believing it's over.
Okay, Red Sox-Yankees thoughts heading into tonight. Last night's Celtics game. We've got Bruins in the offseason, which is what Alan and Millis wants to weigh in on. Go ahead, Alan.
I promise this is going to sound good. 25 seconds, and I'll hang up. Salary cap has all but destroyed the original big market hockey teams. 45 years, we've been watching the same tired act. Forget the regular season. Remember the 83 Islanders. They turned it on. You want a deep, young team. Keep trading the older guys. Keep trading and trading and trading and trading for draft picks. Goodbye, everybody.
Okay, fine with me. I mean, again, if I look out at the landscape of the Bruins and having to pay their young players and who they have on their sheet right now, it's about Backes, 3 years, $6 million per. David Krejci, 3 years left at 7.25, highest paid player on the team. And Tuukka Rask, 3 years left at seven. You got to deal some of that money. You got to deal some of that. If you don't deal off some of that money, you will not be able to sign, you know, McAvoy, DeBrusk, Heinen, Donato, who's ever coming up, Carlo, whether that's Anders Bjork, whether it's Seneshin, you name it. Whoever they got coming up from Providence, I got some players. I got some guys who can play down there. You're not going to be able to sign all those guys if you still have those veterans. So you, to me, for them, it starts now. It starts now.
So they to me, obviously McAvoy's number one. But the only way they're going to move some of that money is to probably include some of that young talent. And so
I still think you can get someone to bite on Krejci. And maybe Rask. Backes, you're saddled with, man. That's got to be a dump. You're going to have to send along a young prospect with Backes just to get rid of that money. Krejci's still, I mean, I don't know, look at his numbers. And he even put up numbers in the postseason. Not that he was effective. I mean, we watched him every day. It didn't look great, but you know the production is there. And I think for a team that is, I don't know, I just think Krejci still has some value left.
You know, in terms of the young guys, other than McAvoy, who would you categorize as a stud?
Well, we don't know yet. I think DeBrusk has a chance to be really good.
Okay, so DeBrusk, I'll give you.
He's a potential all-star.
Okay, so DeBrusk, I'll give you. How about after that?
I think Anders Bjork can be a really good player.
Okay, see, I'm nowhere near that on Bjork.
I liked him. I liked him a lot.
So some of those other guys, this is what I'm saying, are the ones you got to move. Heinen, even Donato, whom I liked up here, but the more I watch him, the more I see the holes in his game. And so, like, those guys are the guys you're going to have to move. You got to identify the right ones and keep them.
Okay, folks, we have a new apparel shop for you. If you want some Felger and Maz gear, what's it? shop.985thesportshub.com?
Correct.
shop.985thesportshub.com. If you're watching on the NBC Sports Boston simulcast, Murray has been modeling the shirt all day. It's a Felger and Maz shirt. Felger and Maz on the front and on back. A slogan says misleading the public since 2009, which comes from...
You're misleading the public?
When John Henry came in here, told us we were misleading the public. So
you're misleading the public?
Mike on Cape Cod, you have a thought?
Yes, I do. How are you doing today, guys?
Good, Mike.
First of all, I have a comment and then a question. But since I've been listening for the last 45 minutes, I have another comment. And it's based on the officiating. A lot of times you guys bust everybody's balls about officiating and don't whine about the officiating. The players have the outcome of the game in line. I know the officials can definitely deter that. But it's all about the players. So that being said, going back to your T-shirt is misleading the public on the back. I love it. I love it. And I want to know, my question to you guys is, you can call me the bitch on the Cape, but yeah, my question would be, do you really just piss people off so they call in? Thank you, and have a good day.
Okay.
No, it's a natural gift.
I just think it comes naturally to us. Yeah. I mean, it's a side benefit. You do get people to call in. But I think that's just... No, I think that's instinctive.
I do. I will say things to anger you.
See, but a lot of people do think it's all contrived. It's not. I mean, I'm giving you my word. It's not. Like, I tend to sort of think negatively.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.